From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just last night when Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren delivered her State of the City address. And the mayor made news in a number of different ways. She told the crowd that she was not endorsing mayoral control of the city school district, at least not in the way that former Mayor Bob Duffy had wanted back in 2010. But the mayor proposed her own version of helping troubled schools. And this hour, we're going to ask about her desire to become more involved in the process when schools are struggling. The mayor confirmed what many had suspected. The inner loop will likely be completely filled. She talked jobs, economic development, poverty, and more. So this hour, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren is back in studio, my guest for the hour. It's nice to see you back.
Well, thank you for having me, Evan.
Well, you did make some news, and a lot of people immediately said mayoral control is back. I know that you want everyone to understand you're not calling for mayoral control in the way that Bob Duff did, at least in 2010. He introduced you last night, and yes. He recently tweeted about this issue. Kind of cryptic. He gave a little stay tuned. Have you been consulting with him on this issue?
Yes, he and I had talked about it a number of months ago. And, you know, this is not something that I've been secretive about. It's something that I think that we as a community and our children and our families and our educational system need some support and some help. When you look at what's happening in our community when it comes down to education, we currently have, you know, 4 schools that are in, you know, basically some, you know, 14 schools that's really in some form of receivership, either under the superintendent or under an EPO or slated to be closed. And so you have sort of this fragmented system. Under the current state's receivership program, the state, if all 14 of these schools went under receivership, they could have 14 different receivers for each schools, which would mean that they did not have to work in concert with one another. There would be, you know, a different strategy for each school, different leader for each school, you know, sort of like what you have right now with East High School having a superintendent and a separate sort of structure, a separate and apart from the school board. We have done extensive research on this model in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and Nashville, Memphis, Tennessee. They have what they call receivership districts, where you would actually basically bring the schools that are going in a state receivership under one turnaround school model, where you'll have that back-end support, but they would be accountable to a structure that is not just individual to each and every school. And I would love to be able to sit at the table with the state Department of Education, the commissioner, and the Board of Regents to talk about how we can bring a district like that to Rochester to help us and help our children, most of all, succeed in life.
Who are the kinds of people who should be receivers? Have you identified? Have you tapped some already?
No. This is the fact of the matter is that the city could not be, under the current state law, the city could not be a receiver. You have to have a proven success rate in turning around troubled schools already. Those are the only type of receivers that the state is considering. A couple weeks ago, they put out an RFP for potential receivership program. Runners or people that want to run these types of programs, you have to have already been have already turned around a school already in order to become a receiver.
Do you have some ideas in mind, though, for, you know, who's on your coalition? Who would you be working with in this kind of an effort?
Well, I think that it has to come from the Board of Regents. It has to also come from the state commissioner. It needs to, you know, you need to have business leaders, of course, parents and other people, because above all, I think that the children of this community, the parents of this community, they need some consistency. They need some accountability, and they need somebody locally to basically be somebody that they can lean on and say, well, this is running right and this is going correctly. Under the current model, after the superintendent, that 1 year or that 2 year period of superintendent turnaround, and she or he is not able to do it, then the state comes in and brings in a receiver. So that person is most likely going to be an external person or organization that's imported here with no relationship to the community, no relationship to or accountability to the community. And I think that in that sort sort of situation, there should be someone locally that can work with the state to provide that structure, support, and accountability to the community that's being serviced by this organization.
What have Regents Brown and Norwood, for example, said? I mean, have you had any conversations with them? Are they supportive of this?
Well, I spoke to, I had a meeting with Regent Brown, or Vice Chancellor now, and I shared with him the letter and talked to him, and he thought that it was an interesting concept. Of course, wanted to do some more research, but, you know, we do realize that we have, you know, issues when we talk about children that are being educated in our community, having, you know, not having the proper ability to receive a quality education for a host of different reasons. You know, there's a host of different reasons that they're not receiving the education that they deserve. However, we only get one chance. You only have one option to raise a child. And they will become adults. And what we do today affects their tomorrow in very, very serious ways. I talked about last night how I've seen and been a part of, you know, situations where, you know, children that have been a part of a failed educational system, a failed family structure, a failed community, what happens and the things that will happen if we don't turn this around in our community. It's not about dismantling the school board. It's not about dismantling the city school structure. It's about when you talk about bringing in external receivers to our community, who are they accountable to and who will they be working with?
Now, just to be clear on this process, you can't do it until, I guess, the state approves in some way, right? I mean, have you been working with the state delegation, members of the assembly? Are they aware of this?
Well, I've spoken to them about it. The current law technically gives the board of the Board of Regents as well as the commissioner the ability to start or to bring in a receiver over a particular school. I'm not sure if to create a receivership district you would need additional state. State legislation or state support. But it's something that I have raised with Majority Leader Morelli, Assemblyman Gant, and have put on the table. But of course, you know, first we need to know if the Board of Regents, if the Commissioner of Education is open to the idea of even having the mayor sitting at the table and talking about this issue.
Sure.
You know, with them.
Do those members of the assembly, Morelli and Gant, do they like this idea?
I think that they're open to it. Of course, you know, everybody wants more, you know, more research. They want to know what happened in Lawrence, Massachusetts, in Nashville and Memphis, and if this is the, best way. But what everyone is committed to is making sure that every child in Rochester has a fighting chance at life, that they have the support at home, the support in the classroom, the support in the community to be productive citizens when they get older. And I think that we cannot continue to do the same thing over and over again and think that we're going to get a different result. Yes, you know, change is hard, but we have to be willing to change and do things differently because we know what we have been doing has not been working for our children. We see the effects of it every day in our community. You can go over to the courthouse right now. You can go over to Monroe County Jail and talk to those kids and talk to those young adults that are sitting in those courtrooms, and you can see how many systems have failed them.
What does the president of the school board say, Van White?
Well, he and I had talked probably a couple months ago, not in depth, about this particular model. And I'm pretty sure he has some issues. He and I text last night. He's out of town. And I said, when he gets back, we can talk about it more. But this is not this is not against a school board.
It doesn't sound like he's on board yet.
I don't know. I don't know, but it's something that we would talk about.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is that if the board or the superintendent is not able to turn these schools around in a specified period of time as outlined by the state, the state can put a receiver over these schools. The board nor the superintendent will have any say over who that receiver will be. And that receiver could be someone externally from not within our, you know, in our city, in our region. And I think that we need to, as a local community, have some sort of relationship with these individuals that may be coming in, or this organization that may be coming in to service our families.
Now, again, the mayor is saying this is not mayoral control, especially not the way that was proposed 5-6 years ago by then Mayor Duffy. But at the time,
I'll say I supported it when, you know, I was on city council. I supported it when Mayor Duffy had raised it.
So why don't you want it now?
Because I think that you do have, and you have to give credit where credit is due. You do have some city schools that are working, you know, that are great. You know, School 58, School of the Arts, School Without Walls. You have a number of schools that are in working, functioning, and doing great work on behalf of the children and families that they represent. So this is not about throwing out, you know, everything. This is about, let's keep what works and let's change what doesn't.
Okay. And so when Mayor Duffy raised that proposal, the critics were saying, we understand the desire to improve schools, but what does Bob Duffy know about schools that would say he should insert himself into the process and he should be in charge? And I wonder if the critics are saying, you know, Mayor Warren cares about schools, but what do you know about running schools that should say you should be in charge, or at least helping run that process for these struggling schools?
Well, the model that I'm talking about, the mayor would not be in charge. The mayor would sit at the table with an organization that has been selected by the Board of Regents to actually, alongside the mayor, to actually run these schools. The mayor would be there to represent the community and work alongside those community members to ensure that there's accountability, consistency, and above all, that the children are receiving the education that they deserve. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that any mayor, whether it was Bob Duffy or myself, we both see the effects of children that are not given the support that they need when they are in the classroom, in the home, or in the community. We see it, you know, him being a former police chief, myself being an attorney, working with kids that were, you know, in group homes and other things like that. This is not something that that we're talking about that we don't know. Now, I may not be able to, I don't have a degree in education, but those are all things that people can, you know, you hire the experts to help you with. The good thing about this particular model here is that you would hire a receiver that has a proven success rate in turning around these troubled schools. It wouldn't be, you know, me
right
doing that. It would be an organization that has already done it somewhere else.
But you're not able to point to an example right now.
No, I have. Okay. I've talked to Lawrence, Massachusetts, Memphis, and Nashville, Tennessee.
But I mean, you know, the kind of receivers who you would want to see appointed locally.
It's already been done in Lawrence, Massachusetts, in Memphis, and Nashville, Tennessee. That's what I'm talking about. Those types of receivers that have done this before.
Okay. And then one more philosophical point, because you have been someone who's not been shy about praising where you see it's due, charter schools. Mm-hmm. Because charter schools, when they're working, the idea is they're kind of a laboratory of education, that there's a little less strictures, there's a little more room to try new things. And so some of that freedom is what a lot of people who like charter schools point to. But when you're looking at schools that may end up in receivership, your concern that you're expressing is that there is too much individuality, that there's not enough uniformity. And does that go against why you've praised, for example, charter schools, which have that flexibility, that individuality, that we've struggled, we're going to try something new, it may work, it may not. Why wouldn't you want in receivership schools to have that same flexibility?
Well, the receivership or a turnaround district, when you have a number of schools that are going into this model, that will go into this model, you have some consistency and accountability across the board. Some in Lawrence, Massachusetts, some of those schools were converted to charter schools, and there were some, you know, some challenges with that, and there were some successes with that. And I think that you have models across this country that you can point to say, you know what, we will try that, and we think that that was successful, but but you know what? That was a mistake, and they know that it was a mistake, and therefore that we don't have to try it. It's not about reinventing a wheel. This is about what happens and what is successful. When it comes down to charter schools, now, I don't support all charter schools. I support charter schools that have a proven success rate in urban education. And so when you talk about the receivership district, you're talking about many different schools that may come under this, that were previously city schools that will have an accountability not to the residents of this community or to the teachers or the parents of this community or anyone here. You're talking about an external receiver that would come in. And I think that that's important for us to note here that I believe that someone locally should work in relationship or in concert with the Board of Regents to bring forth a model that has been successful in other areas instead of trying to piecemeal this thing together.
Okay. One more education question on what's worked in other areas. Yesterday, the Community Design Center of Rochester welcomed the mayor of Greenville, South Carolina, who is one of the most popular mayors in the country. He's a Republican. His name is Knox White. He's been the mayor since 1995. And he was on this program talking about how they've been able to attract more families to the city. 2013, when you were running for mayor, you said one of your big concerns is you want families to be able to say, you don't want just people who are either single or no kids or seniors who want to live in Rochester. You want families to live either downtown or in neighborhoods. You want them to say, the schools are good. We're going to live here. We don't have to move to the suburbs. Mayor White said, consolidated school district changed everything in Greenville. It removed that bad city schools, good suburban schools, and now there's a mix of good schools just about everywhere. And he says, and he's a Republican, but he says it absolutely has been important and it's worked. That integration has worked. Would you support anything like that here going forward?
I think that we need to do everything possible to make sure that our children have a fighting chance at life. We only have one chance to raise them. And I think that you look at all options. There are people currently that's looking at sort of a model like that, not necessarily a consolidated district, but what they would call schools that would be open to both suburban and public schools. And they're looking at that right now here in the Rochester area. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, to be honest with you, you know, Evan, that we have the political will to do that. We don't have the political will. And, you know, to condemn, poor people or people that don't have options to a failing environment where they don't get the choices and the options to send their child to a successful school, to say that this is the only option you have. Rather, that options work for you or not, this is your only option, is wrong. Those parents, the parents of our city, deserve choices when it comes down to educating their children, because I believe that most parents that I know and that live in this city want what's best for their children. They want them to be successful. They want them to have a great education. They just don't have either the income or the ability to give them that education that they deserve for them to have a successful life and a successful future. We know. Look at all the jobs that are coming online today. You think about when we talk about jobs, economic development, and safe neighborhoods, most of those jobs that are coming online, when we talk about photonics and optics, you have to have some skill level. You have to have some technical skill level to be able to work in those jobs. And if you don't, then you're cut out. Most jobs today, you need some sort of technical skill, even in advanced manufacturing, or else you're cut out of the system. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to have to deal with this issue once and for all and stop condemning kids that have no other option, no other choices to failing school systems. Now, I said, there are schools in the Rochester City School District that work. There are others that don't. The ones that don't, they deserve a different turnaround model, models that have worked in other places. It's an option that we should not shut down. We should look at it and see if it can work here.
Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren is my guest, fresh off her State of the City address last night, in which she talked about strengthening the city's Office of Public Integrity. And you saw a number of people reacting to that. A lot of thumbs up this morning from the Democrat and Chronicle, Dave Andreotta, among others, praising that proposal. Why do you want to see a stronger and more independent Office of Public Integrity on the city?
Well, this is something that our director, Tim Weir, had proposed. He had did some research when he came in as a former FBI agent. He did some research on, what's good in our office, what are some things that we can change. He proposed it to me. I took it to, he did a presentation to City Council. I can't remember if it was the end of November, December, or January, and said, I think that we need a more independent, because these are some of the things that I'm seeing in this role that I think would be helpful. And I think that, as I said yesterday, above all, you want to have the public's trust and the public to know that we have, someone that's independent, that's, watching, what our, what employees are doing, what, the mayor is doing, what, taxpayers that's in charge of this. That's sort of a watchdog that's independent. And I think that that's important to work with him in his role. And give him the autonomy that he feels needs that he needs in order to have an effective department. And that's why, we propose it to City Council, and we will be working on legislation to bring it forth formally.
Okay. And, the taxpayers of this county, I think, have seen a lot of discussion about ethics offices, offices of public integrity, county level, now in the city, about this. And I think the question at the heart of this is there enough independence to sort of root out any problems, no matter who is involved? And I mentioned Dave Andreotta writing in the paper this morning that with some praise for this proposal to strengthen it. He's also written critically about someone that you've been close to, Assemblyman Gant, who got a grant from the city to spruce up his own property after another one of his properties he let go. It kind of became a zombie property. It became an eyesore. And Dave is saying a real Office of Public Integrity probably... I don't know if he would argue for it now, but I think he would probably say, look at what's happened there. Should we be investigating, for example, should that be investigated? Are you comfortable?
And actually, I think that the Office of Public Integrity did investigate that.
They did.
And they found that there was nothing wrong with a private citizen, that taking advantage of a grant that the city had that anyone could take advantage of. I think that that was clearly discussed here on this program as well. It was investigated. Someone on City Council had raised the issue, and the OPI director had taken a look at it and had made a determination. But I think that the taxpayers of our community, of course, our Office of Public Integrity has been around a long time, or was implemented by Mayor Duffy. It was good. You have a former FBI agent that came in and said, hey, listen, Mayor, I think that there are some things that we could do to strengthen our office that we should take a look at. And I believe that's something that we should, that we should take advantage of.
You didn't have any trouble with David Gant walking away from that property?
Walking away from what property?
The property that became essentially a zombie property that the Democrat and Chronicle had a couple of stories on. You're not familiar?
No, I'm familiar, but I'm trying to figure out what exactly are you trying? What's the question?
I'm trying to understand if you have a problem with what the Assemblyman did in that particular case.
We have people that walk away. This is the thing about it. You have people that walk away from properties in our community all the time for various reasons. It's a business decision. It's they have invested a lot of money and they feel like, I can't invest any more money for whatever reason. There are things that, decisions that people make all the time. So I don't know, why the Assemblyman did what he, felt was necessary to do for his business, and he's well within his right to do that. Would I, you know, any person that purchases a property in our city, I would want them to make sure that it's fixed up. I would want them to make sure that it is, you know, a great property. But I can't tell people what to do and not do with their property and make business decisions on that. When we do programs in our city, it is open to everyone. We don't discriminate against people because of who they are, what they are, or where they come from. If it is a focused investment, a roofing program, or anything, anyone can take advantages of those options as long as they qualify for them. And it would be wrong of the city to discriminate against people because of who they are, what they look like, what their background is, or anything like that. And so I think that we have to be very, very careful on making sure that any programs that we implement in our community are fair and ethical across the board. And that's the type of program that we run and we have. And we look at does the person qualify for it? Or if it's a landlord, you know, does their tenant's income qualify for it? Is it a, you know, are they, you know, have they done the things necessary in order to get this grant? And that's what we go on, the paperwork, not on who the person is applying for a particular grant.
All right. We're talking to Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. We'll get to some of your phone calls in our second half hour here. And we mentioned that the county is thinking about its own ethics office. They're in the process of creating that. They haven't hired a director yet. And you have Democrats saying that they want the first investigation to be over I-Square. That's a county matter. It's not a city matter. But in the county executive race, you did not endorse the Democrat in that race. And I wonder if you look at I-Square now, do you have any regrets over not endorsing Sandy Frankel?
I don't think that anything that that my endorsement one way or the other has anything to do with what the county is dealing with right now. I have a great relationship with Schroeder Knoffel. I think that working together, we can do some great and innovative things on behalf of our community, and we will continue to do that. I'm not going to get involved in her personnel matters or any decision or choices that she makes as the county executive. I don't have the information that she has or had when she makes her decisions or in that particular situation. I have enough things to deal with in the city of Rochester, like making sure that we have safer, more vibrant neighborhoods and that we're creating jobs and, you know, giving our children educational opportunities.
Okay. You don't look at that with any disappointment then? What's happened there?
Well, my whole focus is making sure that we are doing everything in the city of Rochester to ensure that our community is the best that it can be. And I believe that I have a partner. Cheryl has been at the table with us in the Rochester Memorial Anti-Poverty Initiative. She's working with us with the URI. She's come in and hit the ground running. And we will continue to work together to do what we need to do on behalf of the citizens that we represent.
All right. You didn't endorse in that race, but you came out recently and endorsed an assemblyman, Harry Bronson, who doesn't even really have an opponent yet. He might. Rachel Barnhart, TV news anchor, is considering a run. For all we know, she's not going to run. Why did you make an endorsement in that race?
Evan, I had received several calls from many of my constituents that had said, you know, Mayor, we're hearing that, you know, Harry Bronson or, you know, you're against Harry Bronson. And I said, you know, where are you getting this from? I spoke to Harry as well. And I just wanted to be very, very clear on the fact that I believe that Harry has been someone that has been very, very good to our city and our community. He's worked with our state delegation to bring resources to the city of Rochester. And I think that he's a great assemblyman. And so I wanted everyone to be clear on where I stood, because I know that there are some people that feel comfortable enough to call me and there are others that don't. And so I wanted to be very clear about where I stood, just in case people had that question, because of the number of calls that I had received from constituents that had been polled or something like that, I felt that I needed to let my constituents know exactly where I stood.
If Ms. Barnhart gets into the race, would you reconsider the endorsement?
No, I think that, as I said, Harry Bronson has been a good assembly person for our community. I think that he has worked very, very hard to bring home resources to the city of Rochester and working with the governor and all our state delegation. And it's very important that when you have leaders that are doing the work on behalf of our community, it's not who's in the seat, it's what's being done. And I think that we sometimes get confused on, you know, well, I don't want this person in the seat. Well, you have to look at the work. Is this person doing what they need to do to bring home resources to support things that are happening in our community? Are they there being supportive of our initiatives and working hard on behalf of the citizens? And if they are, then you have to take a look at that and not a look at the person.
When it comes to the anti-poverty initiative, the mayor raised that we're starting to see a little momentum. And I think the people who are behind it, not the least of which is Leonard Brock, but the many people involved have been cautioning this community, don't expect results overnight. These kind of efforts are going to take a long time. We're starting to see more guidelines come out. What to you is the most important next step in the anti-poverty initiative?
I think that the most important next step is to work alongside the community and the population that's most affected by poverty and implementing those strategies that they have brought forth. For example, one of the biggest issues was the being able to have an adult mentor. And if you are able to have an adult mentor to walk you through some of the challenges in actually navigating governmental systems and other things like that, that you'll be able to basically climb the stairway out of poverty. I think that implementing some of those recommendations, really being person-centered, you know, focusing on the person and focusing on the individual and not on the system is very, very important. So one of the things that came out of the IBM report, you know, sometimes we try to fit everyone into a circle. Well, you can't fit a square into a circle. You have to be able to adapt and change and look at things from different sets or angles and give people what they need in order to climb that stairway out of poverty and be flexible with those changes. Listen, it has, you know, poverty has increased in this community over the last 20 years. This is not something that was just one day we just said, poof, we have this huge, this increase in poverty. No, so it's going to take us some time to get out of it. But it's the matter of starting, working with the population that is most affected by poverty, having them be a part of the solution and buy into it, and also being flexible enough to implement those strategies and change those strategies if they're not working.
The report, the most recent report from the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, identifies structural racism as a continuing problem that has to be overcome. And I want to quote from their report. They write, quote, "The greatest obstacle to improved race relations in our community is the nearly 400-year legacy of racial hierarchy and privilege that informs how the dominant society perceives and interacts with all other racial and ethnic groups," end quote. Do you agree, Mayor, that Rochester has a legacy of white privilege and racial hierarchy that still exists today?
Yes. I think that that's a tough thing to really to say and to look down and say and admit that we have some racial hierarchy problems here in our community. But I believe that we have come a long way. We have in the last 3 to 4 years talked about racism. We've talked about these issues that the community at large feels. It's not just blacks, it's white, it's, you know, Hispanics, it's, you know, it's people across the board. It is something that I believe that we can overcome. But in order to really change things, you have to be willing to admit first that it's a problem. And if you're able to admit it, then you're able to move forward. For example, when I was president of the Black Bar Association back in 2007, there had never in 100-year history of the Monroe County Bar Association been an African-American president of the bar. in our there had, you know, at that point in time, we had no African American or Latino partners at any of the majority law firms. In the city and the county law departments, there was no people of color. And it's not something when I say that, I'm not saying that it's intentional. It's not something that I say, okay, well, I'm not going to hire Black people. I'm not going to hire Hispanic people. I'm not going to do that. I'm not saying that it's always intentional. It's just that people feel more comfortable and they look at things sometimes a little bit differently unless you point it out. It wasn't until I wrote an article in the DNC that people started to really take a look at that and say, well, wait a minute. We don't have any people of color or we had one in the city's law department. There are no majority, African Americans as partners in the law firms and majority law firms. There's never been an African American president of the Monroe County Bar Association. Why is that? And then you ask the question, why? It's not because they're not qualified. It wasn't because of that. It's because it never was a thought in the mind to actually elevate to that level. And when I stepped down as president, T. Andrew Brown was coming in as the president of the Monroe County Bar Association. After that, you had Connie Walker that was the president 2 years later. You had Todd Ballard become a partner at Harris Beach. You know, Sheila Gaddis became a partner, Lamar Jackson as well. The city has a number of African Americans that are now in the law department, and didn't just start when I became mayor. It started before that. But it's something that if you don't look at, you will easily overlook. It's the same thing when I talk about that you can live in Rochester all your life and never see poverty. It's not because it doesn't exist. It's because it's something that you never, ever want to see or acknowledge because it's never been brought to your attention. And then once it's brought to your attention, you can say, oh, you know what? I understand. I understand now exactly what we're talking about.
When you ran for mayor in 2013, you talked about the importance of not just focusing development on downtown. It's easy to get segregated. A lot of the business growth downtown, the neighborhoods are important. You know, and here in 2016, you can probably find some neighbors who still feel like downtown's getting a lot of the attention, a lot mm-hmm. of the development, a lot of the excitement. What's going on in the neighborhoods? And have we made any progress there?
I think that, you know, as I said last night, we have done both. I think that the needs are different in our neighborhoods versus downtown. You have to, and we talked about downtown being a heart and the neighborhoods being the veins and the arteries. You know, when you look at what happened with Bull's Head and the fact that you had this dilapidated structure that had been there for 20 years that was just standing there, we have started to move that process along. That building has come down in the Josiana neighborhood. You have Stadium Estates 1 and 2 going up. You have a new owner of the Rochester Rhinos in that stadium. We tore down the old Delco site and doing development there. When you look at what's happening in Markview Heights and the Eastman Dental Dispensary being renovated. It's an urban renewal district. We're looking at purpose-built communities on Main Street and working with the neighborhood and the community leaders in that area to bring resources, infill housing, you know, roofing, and other things to the neighbors in that area. The one other project I think that has been on the shelf for a number of years has been the La Marqueta project, which is located on Clinton Avenue, And as I said last night, it's time that we look at that project, that it may not be what was originally planned to be, but it's something that we made a commitment to as a city a number of years ago that we need to fulfill. The neighbors in that area deserve some changes. When you look at Hudson Avenue, I talked about the House of Mercy. Many of the neighbors have talked about that area. They deserve a home that can allow them to do God's work. And, you know, we are actually working with Conifer Realty, Assemblyman Gant's office, to actually build, and not build, but renovate them a home that they can be proud of and be able to serve the community and the population that's most vulnerable in our city. We're also working on Hudson Avenue with Konia and DePaul to bring in some much needed housing to that area as well. And so we are doing both. We cannot do everything at one time, but I think that across the city, I can point in every neighborhood or every sector of our city where there's some type of development or planned development that will be happening.
All right, try to get through a few more quick issues here. In your first year in office, we talked on this program about your desire to see a performing arts center. You appealed to the state for, I think, $100 million. Didn't happen at the time. And Arnie Rothschild has said, you know, at the time, he said, great, whether it's downtown, they had looked at Medley Center, a lot of different options, but they wanted to see something. In 2016, is that a dead issue, or do you still want to see funding for a performing arts center?
Oh, I still want a performing arts center downtown. Actually, the state did give us money in the Regional Economic Development gave us money to study a performing arts center downtown. We're currently in the process of doing that study. We expect a report in the next couple months, and so we'll go from there. I still believe that we are a great city of the arts. We have a number of different arts organizations here that would like to, and we have a number. RBTL brings a number of Broadway shows here to our community. And, you know, when you think about development that's happening on East Main right now with the Auditorium Theater, you have Corpus Christi, that is a new housing development that's just been done. You have Eastman Gardens, which will be another housing development that's done. And then you have the auditorium located right there in that neighborhood. Parking is a problem. The facilities, when it comes down to many of the Broadway shows that that could come here, has been an issue with the way that the facilities are currently set up. And I believe that there are some options that we should explore when it comes down to a performing arts center.
Okay, so not a dead issue. When it comes to economic development, we're seeing out in Seneca County, Lago Resort and Casino, people have talked in this community for years about whether Rochester should try to get into gaming. Is that a dead issue, or do you think the city would ever move to try to get into some kind of gaming or casino?
I think that when you're talking about jobs and options for the community, you have to look at everything. And when you're looking at, rather you're talking about economic development, performing arts center, casino, or a new business coming in, it's really about what are the needs of your community? What are the needs of the residents? I've already talked about the fact that you have a number of jobs that are coming on that are highly qualified positions where you need technical jobs. Well, you also need jobs for individuals that would not necessarily qualify to fill those jobs. Where are they coming in? How do we get those businesses? What options are available for them? And you have to look across the board at that. And everything as a city, and I think as a mayor, my job is to look at all options and that are being presented to me, evaluate those, and see if that's what's good for our community and talk to our community about it, if it's a viable option.
It doesn't sound like ruling out a casino. Right now, if you had to choose one side or another, would you like to see one?
I would like to see a performing arts center.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave that there. I don't think you surprised too many people last night when you mentioned the inner loop and filling more of it. Jim McIntosh, city engineer, has indicated that it was always a possibility that you were going to do a third of it first. That's in process. We're seeing that work happen. But do we have the money and sort of a timetable for filling the rest of the inner loop?
No, we don't have the money yet. We are putting a grant application together. We applied for one last year. We want to study it first to see, you know, how much of the northern portion we would need could be filled in based on the study. And then we would, of course, be going for the grant applications to fill it in. But we need to make sure that we have the study first. That's what they did on the southeastern side of of the inner loop before actually getting the money to fill it in. You need to have a plan and a study done, and that's what we would be looking for.
Okay. Let me grab a phone call. Michael in Brighton. First up, go ahead, Michael.
Yes, I wanted to ask the mayor regarding uniting the Democratic Party. Noted that she did not endorse Sandra Frankel when it came to county executive, and I'm wondering, going forward, what her plans are regarding trying to have a united Democratic Party in this county.
All right, Michael, thank you. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, I think that I'm very supportive of the Democratic Party. I make decisions based on what I think is best for the citizens of Rochester at that point in time. I thought that staying out of the county executive race was the best thing. I endorsed Harry Bronson, who's a Democrat. I just endorsed Hillary Clinton, who's also a Democrat. I work alongside Democrats every day, and I am a Democrat myself. I love my party. I love the values that our party stands for, and I look forward to working with our party going forward.
All right. Well, do you agree that there is a split in the local Democratic Party?
Well, I think that that there are issues that we have to overcome as a community and as a Democratic Party, and that's just not on my side. It's on the other side as well. We have to come together in a unique way, and I think that once I've said to the party chair, I'm willing to come to any table, talk to anyone that wants to sit down and talk to me. Because I believe in our democratic values and in our party. We have to, but you can't have a one-sided conversation. Other people have to want to be there and have to want to deal with the issues that we have in our party.
You know, the talk of what Michael's talking about, the split in the Democratic Party, uniting the Democrats, it's been a theme for a while. And on this program, it came up in a way that I did not expect when Assemblyman Gant was on the program talking about a number of issues. Right before the end of the program, it came up when I had asked him, I said, I'd like to see more of you. We've got a mayor who's always happy to come on the program, a county executive, and certainly would love to talk to you more. And I want to listen if we can, I don't know if we have, if we can listen to what David Gant said, which I kind of caught me off guard right at the end of that program.
Because I've watched the history over the years. Remember, I've been a public official for 43 years.
David Gant.
And I've watched exactly what happened to my community over those years. Include but not limited what happened to us as public officials. We would want my guy to walk away from the Democratic Party because of the same racist stuff.
You see racism in the Democratic Party locally?
Pardon?
You see racism in the Democratic Party locally?
Did I? Ask the Democratic Party, they'll tell you.
So that was what he said that caught me off guard, Mayor. And he mentioned maybe I'll walk away from the Democratic Party. I don't know if he's ever expressed anything like that to you. He hasn't walked away from the party that I know.
Well, I don't speak for David Gant.
I understand.
So
I understand. But did that surprise you? Listening to that, does that surprise you?
He's I think that we have to be clear on what we're talking about here. Back in 2005, this community had a very contested mayoral race where you had Wade Norwood, who ran for mayor, and you had Bob Duffy. And when Bob Duffy won, I think that, if I, can give a little bit of a talk about what I think that Assemblyman Gant is talking about, and you can ask him for yourself. After the race, Bob and David sat down. And, they talked and they said, listen, we're going to do whatever is best for our community and working together. And I think that even though they were on different sides, they worked together when Bob was mayor, lieutenant governor, to actually do what was best for the citizens of Rochester and came together. And they put the political differences aside and we all rallied behind. Many people may not remember this. In 2005, I ran for city council and I lost by 7 votes. And so, and Bob and I were able to develop a great relationship from that. And we worked together and we still work together to this day, respect him as a leader as well. But anyways, I think that in 2005, David remembers sitting down with Bob, having that discussion and saying, look, we're going to do whatever we need to do on behalf of our community. And Wade, I believe, had another line, and Wade stepped out of the race, and it was over. All Democrats united around Bob Duffy, and he ultimately became mayor, and they worked together since then. What happened in 2014 when I was elected, or in that race, was that after I won the Democratic Party, my own party ran another campaign against me on another line. And so David remembers that 2005 race, and he assumed, and everybody says, you know, you don't assume. You assume that, okay, well, the primary is where the battle is. And once you win the primary, everyone unites behind the party's candidate. And that didn't happen. And the same party that we were both a part of, they ran another campaign against me. And so that's what he's talking about. When you expect the party to unite at that point in time, you know, it was a, you know, and I respect Tom Richards as a leader and as a man, and I think that he was a good mayor. But that didn't happen. It was the Democrats that ran Tom on another line, Democrats that are still part of this party, and not to say that they shouldn't be part of the party, but those are the issues that you're dealing with. You can't just wash that under the rug. Now, I remember I got an email from, a Democrat, one that is one of the people that ran this primary against me, way before the primary, where she said to me, if you decide to run, you will destroy this party, and no one, and me and my team, will not be a part of supporting you, even if you win. Well, that's not democratic values. That's not the way that you do business and unite a party. Those same people are a part of this, a part of the party today. They have discussions now where you hear, and I'm pretty sure many people hear the rumblings of, oh, we're going to primary the mayor and things like that and all that type of stuff. But I do the work that I do in this community for the citizens of this community because I believe in the city of Rochester. I believe that our future is as bright as our past. I believe that we can have safe neighborhoods. I believe that we can change the job market. I believe that we can have a safer community and an educational environment that is best for our children. For me, this seat does not belong to me. It belongs to the community that I serve. And that's why I do this. And so to me, the party is one thing, but we can't get caught up in the individual personalities about who's doing the job and about why this person is doing the job. Is the work getting done? I think that last night I showed the work is being done and we are going to be a better city and better community because of it.
All right, in our last 20 seconds, I want to mention that there is a Kickstart Your Health Rochester starting May 1st, and the mayor is supporting that.
Yes.
That's 21 days of free healthy eating online challenge. KickstartYourHealthRochester.org, nice community initiative. You're supporting that yet?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We are going to be kickstarting our health, and we want a city that's healthy, one that's vibrant. We're also going to be having clean sweep, so please sign up to be a part of our clean sweep. Let's clean up our city, from the winter, and let's have a cleaner, greener city as well.
Well, if you check out KickstartYourHealthRochester.org, all kind of stats on kids, challenges of obesity, health risks, type 2 diabetes, and more. And so check out why the mayor is supporting that there on KickstartYourHealthRochester.org. Thank you for being here.
Thank
you. Always great to see you in studio.
Thank you,
and we'll talk to you soon. That's Mayor Lovely Warren. Our thanks to Bella Banca, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer of this broadcast. And I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk with you Friday on Member Supported Public Radio.